Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to the BBC Music Magazine podcast. You can subscribe to the magazine by visiting classical-music.com or to our interactive iPad edition by visiting itunes.com. BBC Music Magazine is now an official Apple Music curator, and you can listen to our exclusive playlists by visiting applemusic.com/bbcmm. Today it's the turn of First Listen, where members of the editorial team chat about and rate an important new release. And here in the studio is Rebecca Franks, our reviews editor, Jeremy Pound, our deputy editor, and Eleanor Cooper, our editorial assistant.
Hello.
And this month we've been listening to Leoncavallo's opera Zazar in its 1919 version, revived and recorded by the record label Opera Rara, starring Emanuele Jarjo and Riccardo Massi, among others, with the BBC Symphony Orchestra under Maurizio Bernini. So, are we looking at Zazar hurrah, or more a question of Zazar bizarre? Let's hear the opening to the opera. So that was the opening to Leoncavallo's Zazar. Jeremy, go on, tell us about the plot.
Well, basically, it opens in a music hall, and there's actually a vast array of characters who kind of come in and out during that first act. It can be quite confusing. You have to keep your finger on what's happening. The central character is Zazar, and it's basically about the fact that she falls in love with Milio, who is a very affluential businessman. He doesn't tell her that he's actually married. And then she goes to Paris and she discovers that he is married. And then it's about how, there's a bit of a spoiler alert coming here, but it's about how they cannot fall together in love and be together because he is married. And she's actually absolute about that. In a sort of quite a nice rare twist for Verismo opera, there is actually no one dies in it, which makes a nice change.
So another spoiler. So thank you for that. Rebecca, the story is very dramatic, and there's lots of gnashing and wailing of teeth. Does the music, do you think, reflect that?
Well, it's an interesting case. I mean, I think it's an opera that sort of lives or dies by the quality of its heroine, and it's not music that has sort of, it's packed with big sort of Puccini tunes or anything. There is a lot of lyrical stuff there, but it's you're not going to come away humming a lot of the tunes, I don't think. But actually, it has a tremendous impact, I found. And it's quite interesting. There's an interesting booklet essay in the CD which talks a lot about why this opera has been forgotten. And one of the sort of theories that it explores is the idea that in this realist Verismo opera, he was moving further and further towards making the opera more like speech, making the singing more like speech, so that you could really, you didn't have to suspend so much disbelief, which
so
I thought was quite interesting.
Sort of Wagnerian
in a sense.
So we've got a sort of a hybrid, really, between the sort of romantic sort of impressionism of Wagner and the sort of real Verismo sort of theatrical appeal.
Yeah, and I think when in the moment, I found it really grabbed me, actually. And there were lots of colourful touches. There's a moment where her mother comes on and she's talking about the geese, and there's lots of sort of little imitative sounds in the orchestra, and there's sort of comic touches as well. And also all the music, because it's set in a music hall, so we have a lot of music that's taking place on the stage. You hear snippets in the background, and I think he plays with the music of the characters and the music of the music hall in a clever way as well.
Yes, it's quite interesting, isn't it, Eleanor, the idea that characters are actually hearing the music that is being performed, but then they are singing as well. So we have this real juxtaposition of sort of two types of music.
I think that's how he gets away with having some arias in the background, because you do hear offstage singing, and those are the long extended passages. But over the top of that, you have other people chatting and singing in speech form. Which is very kind of engaging and entertaining.
And in the first act, the parts of me, I thought, oh, why? You know, it's all building to this moment where they kiss and declare that they're in love, and you just think, oh, the stuff before, could it get a bit of a move on? But then actually, when you think about it, there's lots of lively, interesting stuff happening in a way. So perhaps we could actually hear that moment where they fall in love. So that's the end of Act One, where Emilio and Cesare finally kiss and decide that they're in love, and that paves the way for the rest of the story that follows.
It does, and it soon sort of moves on to sort of suspicions arising, as Cascar, I think, suggests that there's more to Emilio than meets the eye. And Cesare gets suspicious and decides to pack her bags and go off to Paris to see what he's all about. And there's a wonderful passage, actually, towards the end of Act Two, where Cesare is actually packing her bags with the help of her maid and plans to go off to Paris. And I think it's a wonderful passage and really moves the drama along. So let's hear a bit of that. So that was an extract from near the end of Act Two, where Cesare's going off to see whether Emilio is the man that he proclaims he is. But Eleanor, it is a wonderfully expressive moment.
It is, yeah, it's very chaotic. And there's lots of lovely stage directions in the libretto, which kind of suggests that she's running around with one shoe on and running into the closet when that should be her maid's job, and her maid's trying to stop her. And it's, very active. And then she finally gets off and goes to Paris.
I'd actually really like to see this staged. I think I've really enjoyed listening to it on CD, and they did this concert performance, but I just think there would be so much there to bring out in a production.
Yeah, it'd be brilliant. I think you'd understand it slightly more easily in a stage version, because occasionally it is confusing when you're listening to it, to just comprehend all the characters and where they are on stage and when they're at exiting stage right and left.
Although I do find them very characterful. I find Emilia Yahoo's wonderfully vivacious. Mm. And I think she really manages to bring across those emotions through the microphone. And I think
she's wonderful, yeah. She really captures every nuance, doesn't she? And you feel like she's just living that character.
And particularly when it's the speech-like sections and she's interacting with... It feels very natural always, all of her interjections and kind of speaking across people and all of that.
And I really like Ricardo Massi as Emilio. I think he's got a very warm tenor voice.
Yeah, I slightly wonder with him. I couldn't work out whether it was just because... Emilio, the character, you think, well, why is she falling in love with him? Or has she even fallen in love with him? Is this all just lust, actually? But I sort of wondered if he could have been just a little bit more sort of compelling, something that you could see in his hear in his voice somehow that would make you think, oh yes, she's been completely bowled over by this quality.
I mean, she's clearly very vulnerable. She's a very insecure person, Cesar, I think. I mean, she's surrounded by all these people. She's constantly having to be reassured, and she's guided by her mum and her maid and her friends. And, you know.
Oh, it's a very difficult childhood, hasn't it? A terrible childhood.
And you hear about that later when she is, in fact, in the next track, you hear about it, when she discovers Milo's daughter, Toto. And Toto and her have this conversation about childhood and about how Toto's had this wonderful childhood and Zazar's had this very troubled one. Should we hear that now?
Antonietta Dufresne, il nome mio. Ma mi dicono Totò.
Totò, di tu.
Voi mi date del tu, perché?
Perché tu rassomigli, voi rassomigliate ad uno che amo tanto.
Uno che amate? Io somiglio a papà, lo conoscete?
No.
Io da sei mesi non vedea.
So that was Toto, Milo's daughter, and Zazar speaking about their childhoods. So I think it's a lovely device that Leoncavallo uses, but I rather question the age of the voice. The Giulia Ferri is quite old for Toto. I think a younger, more vulnerable-sounding voice would have been more convincing for me.
That's a fair point. What is interesting, though, is so much of the emotion in this opera is actually built around Milo, who doesn't deserve any of it. He has this loving wife, his loving daughter. We have Zaza, who sort of falls in love with her. And yet he is actually a thoroughly unlikable, two-dimensional character. And actually, Leoncavallo actually plays into his hands by giving him some of the best arias as well. And you think, I'm not entirely convinced by this, because basically he is a bloke who turns up in a flash suit at this music hall in Saint-Étienne, kind of flashes himself around, doesn't tell Zaza that he's already married and has a daughter.
A very sort of weak fight, doesn't he? He goes, oh, I mustn't go near her because...
And he's portrayed, he's portrayed as this romantic hero. It's an absolute disgrace. And the aria I want to kind of show is beginning of the third act, where he's looking at his desk and he's having these quandary. And he actually begins with, oh, my little desk so covered with clutter, just like my heart so cluttered with woes. And you think, nonsense, absolute nonsense. You've done the dirty on your wife. And now you're kind of left with this slight quandary, but I'm just simply not convinced of it. However, the music itself is very beautiful.
What a cad.
Yeah, what an absolute cad. And for me, actually, he is the character which makes the opera itself unconvincing, is that I just cannot sympathise or empathise with him at all. I also I'm not hugely convinced by the character of Zazar at all. I think she has these little arguments at the beginning with Floriana, who's her sort of arch rival, and she's portrayed initially as being very kind of flighty and lightweight, and then suddenly halfway through the first act she suddenly becomes this very in-depth character. There's almost like this big character shift, and I find it very unconvincing.
It's interesting, the libretto is written by Leoncavallo as well, and you know, he was thought of equally as much of a poet as he was a composer, and you know, that he could have gone one way or the other. I mean, we don't know a huge amount about his life, but clearly he was a man who, you know, wrote operas to entertain audiences, and I don't think one should read too much into these. You know, the action moves along. There's a lot going on. There are a lot of characters, and I have a feeling that two-dimensional characters were the order of the day, to be frank, in an awful lot of these operas. It's not surprising it's got lost, but it's really lovely to hear it revived, I have to say. How revived it's going to stay, I have no idea. I mean, I don't know about you, but I can see it being performed by some of these country operas around the UK, people like Grange Park and Loughborough and Holland Park. But I mean, you know, Rebecca, can you see it appearing at the Opera House or ENO?
Well, as I said before, I think it depends on the heroine, really. And if you've got a singer who can carry it, like we have here, then, you know, there are lots of operas that perhaps aren't, you know, absolutely first-rate operas that get staged at the big opera houses. But I can sort of imagine it more in a country house opera setting, as you say. But I think, yeah, it does very much depend on the voice. And I think in Aliyahu, we really have an ideal person for this. And, you know, she could carry it off.
I mean, I can imagine the opening scene is really very imaginative. The idea of, you know, behind the scenes of a music hall and actors, singers going on and off and singing their numbers to an imagined audience the other side of the set is really lovely. And I think if it's directed well, I think it could prove to be a very spectacular production.
Yeah, actually. I think it's much more sort of engaging than a lot of forgotten operas that get revived, and some of them you think, well, that was interesting to hear, but, you know, 4 hours of bel canto might not necessarily have the plot or the depth to carry it.
It's only a couple of hours long.
This is kind of, yeah, it's just, it's good entertainment.
I think the nice thing about it is because it does move on so quickly, and yet it is very fast-paced, and that probably will play in its favour in terms of being revived, because it is engaging as you watch it or listen to it.
And we didn't have its, you know, shortage of supporters when it was premiered.
It was
by Toscanini was conducting.
Yeah, and then a big hit being played in a lot of countries very quickly, I think. So it clearly had its appeal at the time.
So we need some marks out of 10. Rebecca?
I'm going to give this 8 out of 10. I think it's a really great project. And I'd just like to say, I think actually they've presented it really beautifully, and it's got a good essay, and it's got a full libretto and translation, which you don't always get. And I think that's where you absolutely have to have it for a project like this. I would give more points for Emin Eliyahu because I think she's fantastic, but overall, 8.
8. Jeremy?
I'm going to give it 6 out of 10. I think the cast is excellent. I think the playing is excellent, and it moves along very nicely. Patricia Bardon's voice is a little bit of an acquired taste as Anaïda, which is Zaza's mother. But I think the actual performance is wonderful, but I found the opera itself very unconvincing and not remotely memorable, I'm afraid.
Jeremy with his literary hat on there. Eleanor?
I think I'm also going to give it 8, actually, because I equally really enjoyed the music. I really enjoyed the performance. I'd really like to see it, which I think is partly the point of this project, is to bring this opera out and make people curious about it. So, and I think it succeeded in doing that.
So I'm going to give this 7. I agree with Jeremy's points that the opera is fairly lightweight and not entirely convincing, but I also agree with Eleanor and Rebecca in that it is wonderfully performed and wonderfully sung, and I think does deserve revival, and I think could prove to be a very entertaining evening's opera. And I think that's, you know, when you go off and hear the opera, the last thing necessarily that you want is something of Wagnerian stature and something to tax the brain too much. So I think 7 out of 10, which gives us an average of 7.25 for Zazar. So that brings us to the end of this month's First Listen. Do join us next month. We'll be discussing another exciting, we hope, new release. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this BBC Music Magazine podcast, which was produced in our Bristol studio by Jack Fletcher. For more of our podcasts, visit our website at classical-music.com or simply head to iTunes.